Welcome to the USPSA podcast. We'll be discussing USPSA, Steel Challenge, and Multigun. We'll be going behind the scenes to talk to area directors about USPSA board procedures and policies, what's in the minutes from the board meetings, and the discussions behind them. The current USPSA bylaws and the minutes can be found at USPSA.org/BOD_minutes and USPSA.org/bylaws. Additional information about USPSA, Steel Challenge, the rules, how to join, announcements, and where to find clubs can also be found at USPSA.org and SCSA.org, and on mobile apps available from app stores.
All right, this is the second USPSA podcast, and tonight we have a special guest, Shannon Smith, who is joining me. Shannon has been working with us at national events since 2015, and we're going to go over some of that, and then we're going to talk about the upcoming 2022 schedule of nationals. So Shannon, thank you for joining me tonight. Glad to have you on. Let's talk about what you guys have you've done with nationals starting back in 2015.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me. Second podcast. I feel pretty privileged. Not as privileged as number one, you know, but I'm down with number two.
So back in 2015, 2016, nationals went to Frostproof, and Dave Jenkins was the match director, and you were on the ground as kind of the co-match director and the guy in charge of the facilities there. So, and that was the first year that I came on board as the, I think I was the part-time club coordinator at the time. So let's just kind of go a little history of nationals over the last, you know, 6-7 years and where we're at right now.
And it seems like so long ago, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah, so especially considering. Yeah. One of those was the Hurricane Nationals.
Right. I think that was 16. I think I have to Google that. Yes. But you know, I was with Universal Shooting Academy for a while there, and we had the World Championship in 14, the IPSC World Championship. So we were pretty, you know, well established, well set up. Obviously, having put on something like that. I honestly don't even remember how the conversation came about, but I think I talked to you or Mike or something at one point about possibly getting some nationals down there. And that was the first one we did. And Dave, a really good friend of mine, has helped me do a lot of the matches over the years, Florida Open and Monster Match and all the things that we've done. So as you've suckered me into things in the past, I kind of suckered him into being the official match director. And he did an awesome job, but I was obviously there with him and man on the ground getting stuff done. So we pulled it off, even in a hurricane.
Yeah, so I think 15 and 16, so 15 was Phil Strader would have written that contract. 16 would have carried over from his administration. And then after Hurricane Nationals, we had 2017, which was Optics, which I remember very specifically. Optics was in the spring, and we had a lot of people throw a fit that it was too early in the year.
Yeah, because it wasn't too long after the 16 Nationals, you know, 4 months or something.
Yeah, so the 16 Nationals ended at like the end of October, and then the 17 was right at the end of April, if I remember correctly, because 17 was also the Paso Park held the Classic Nationals that year as well. So we rolled out of 2017, and then I remember that Mike and I said we wanted to meet with you, and we flew down.
Oh God,
to your house, and we sat around the pool there in the backyard before you fired up stakes and tricked you into what we referred to as the 9 days of nationals.
I've made a lot of bad decisions in my life, but saying yes to that was right there towards the top. Horrible idea.
Amazingly enough, somehow we pulled off three back-to-back 3-day national events.
With no turnover date, I might add.
With no turnover date. I think the original idea was that between matches 1 and 2, there were going to be 6 preset stages.
Yeah.
Of the 20 or so. And then there was some changeover between that. And I think that first night, if I'm not mistaken, when you finally made it to awards, you threatened to kill me.
I don't think I made it the first changeover. We were out there under the car lights and four wheeler lights. And, but yeah, we had a well planned and we pulled it off. The, I forget how many unused stages we had built on the first match. But it was a significant number, you know, five or six. And then I think we had a bunch of classifiers in that one too. So those didn't require changes.
Yeah. So there was nine classifier stages that came out of that match.
Yeah. So we didn't change over there. And, you know, and the ones we did that did have changes, we just had to stay and go down. You know, and as you know, it's not just a physical change. You got to vet it afterwards. You know, you do something so simple as swap a target from a IPSC to a USPSA, or, you know, you got to relook at the stage, make sure you don't have shoot throughs. And to my standards anyway. So it takes, you know, that was the bulk of our time that night, was just kind of vetting as best we could vet in the 11 PM frostproof nighttime.
All right. So it wasn't the best of ideas, but for some reason it worked. I think it worked because of the crew that you led on the ground. Which is one of the things that, as we kind of get into talking about Nationals, I want to go over kind of how we build matches. But after we pulled off the 9 days of Nationals, I was told we can never do that again. So we came up with the high cap, low cap, which the high cap that year was out in St. George, Utah at Supps Range, where you actually ended up being the last minute match director for that, because you were going to be kind of the co-match director with me as the MD, and I was unable to make it to that match. That was in September. So you got kind of a couple weeks notice. You got thrown into, here's all the stages, here's the playbook, go have fun with it. And I was not out there for setup for that match, and I missed it altogether, didn't come and shoot it. And I heard that it was a really good match. But you guys had some difficulty. I think you guys had the prison crew out there helping you set up.
Yeah, they did good. I forgot his last name. What's the guy's name? Bob.
Bob Wolf.
Yeah, Wolf. Awesome dude. And I think I'd probably met him before, but didn't really know him. And so he was, you know, he's kind of the me at Frostproof. He's kind of that guy out there, and was great to work with. And yeah, they brought in the prison crew to nail nails, which is pretty nice, because it's like nailing nails in concrete out there. But it went well. You know, we had a good plan and a good execution. And I think, you know, back to the 9 days thing, I don't know if it's you driving the change or the past president or administration or whatever, but I like the fact that you do it differently. And whether it's a, you know, run what you brung kind of setup, or you know, two nationals or whatever we got next year. I think there's 17 national championships next year or something. You know, switching it up. And we've done it pretty much about every way there is, in terms of, even I think Phil was the one that started having the individual nationals.
Standalone.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was cool.
So he started having standalone.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool, but it's got its problems. And, you know, having them all together is cool. That's got its problems. But I like changing up and going to 19 on the high cap, low cap. I think that was about the time that we had some internal discussions on wanting to get more staff that shoot, and, you know, doing something like the 9 days doesn't afford that opportunity. So again, you know, changing up the format, throwing some staff matches in there, again, got its own challenges, you know, makes some things difficult. But I'm a proponent, and I think you are as well, of, you know, I want staff that wants to shoot.
Definitely. Actually, we started talking about that. You and I started talking about that in 2018. Had more staff that shot the match at high cap and low cap because of the format. It wasn't a back-to-back format. You were able to have a staff match followed by the three-day main competitor match for both of those. So that was the first year that we did that, because in the back-to-back format that USPSA used to run, it was work one, shoot one.
Right.
And people had to chase down a slot, and they had to pay for the slot. So you were out there for several days working the match, and then you had to pay to shoot the second one. So in 2019 is the first change with that. And it was also the change when we went from having the classic Nationals set out in Paso Park. That actually changed in 2018, where it rolled into that 9 days. So we started changing divisions up and kind of based on participation, what you see at the club level, on how we can stack divisions together.
And that's constantly changing, as we're seeing, you know, with Carry Right. with Carry Optics coming on and PCC coming on. It's changing what used to be the air quote big divisions.
Right. And so in 2019, going into 2020, PCC had this huge growth spurt, which is why we had we did multi-gun nationals, and you were the master director for that. And then PCC was back to back with that back at Frostproof. And then we ran the back to back divisions with Classic pulled out that year at CMP. So multi-gun was the second year for multi-gun that you ran at Universal, if I'm not mistaken, because you ran it in 2019.
And you're talking 20, right?
Yeah, 20 was when we did.
That was the Kung Flu. We had to postpone it.
Yep, we had to push it back from April until June, and then it went multi-gun with a little bit of a break, and then PCC followed up where we changed some of the stages over for it.
Yeah. So that worked out. I was, from a business standpoint, super, super nervous there because we had, we'd allocated a lot of that money for the match and other things. And then the whole Rona thing started, and I was pretty much on the phone hourly with either you or Mike One, you know, are we going to postpone? Are we going to cancel? What are we going to do? So we ended up pushing it. And then with the request for refund date, that was coming in. So I had a whole lot of sleepless nights there, but it ended up working out fine. You know, we lost some people, but we gained a lot of people that we didn't initially have because of the date change, and they could make it then. So ended up working out great. And I was happy that we were able to do it, you know, with everything else in the world, whatever you think about the virus thing, you know, the world was really crazy at that point. And I was proud that we were able to pull it off and keep some semblance of normalcy, and that, you know, 200 people didn't die the week after the match because they got sick at our range.
Right.
I mean, it crossed my mind.
Because we came out of Florida Open in February of that year with the plan to come back in March, at the end of March, to go multi-gun and then PCC at the first part of April. And I mean, the world shut down essentially the second weekend of March in 2020, which is when we pushed the schedule into June. And again, like you said, unknown. We didn't know what was going on. We didn't know if people could fly, if they could make it, if they could drive. But we ended up managing not only to hold that national event for both multi-gun and PCC, then we came back and we did the back-to-back in the fall back there with you. And already had stuff announced for 2021. I think we are the only major sports organization, shooting sports organization, that actually held all of their nationals in 2020, which is something to be said for you being able to pull it off, and that we had them scheduled in Florida, that we were on a privately owned range versus public or state park or any of that. So we didn't have any of those things to worry about. And everyone was grateful that we were able to hold the matches. So yeah, I think it worked out great.
100% agree. And I don't know if you're going to get to venues or not, if that's a topic of conversation, but you know, that's something that a lot of folks don't understand. There's nothing against them. They're not running nationals, and they're not running USPSA, and they don't understand. But there's not a whole lot of places that can hold a national championship for a lot of reasons that don't have anything to do with how many poppers you have, you know, and things like being privately owned, and nobody can tell us to shut down. It was a huge deal of it. And I'm, you know, I wasn't for postponing that. I wouldn't have done it if it was 100% up to me. But, you know, it was a conversation with Mike and you and at the time. And just like the hurricane, you know, I didn't cancel during the hurricane. And Mike was really leaning towards canceling that second match. But you just, you know, I'm sure you've seen ranges that cancel at three sprinkles fall down on a Sunday morning at their local match, and they cancel. And You know,
I see them. I see them that if the forecast on Friday looks bad on Sunday, they pull the plug.
Right. And some ranges, you know, drainage is a big issue in our sport.
Right.
And I appreciate that. And we have a range here in Florida that it's that just they flat out can't. It just straight up floods. But I distinctly remember as a young shooter going to a range here in Florida, and it was like an hour and 45, 2 hour drive on a Sunday morning for just a local rinky dink match. No big deal. And we got there and they canceled because they didn't want to set up in the rain. You know, the range wasn't flooded and I wasn't running matches at the time. You know, I had no idea that's where I was going to end up in life, but I never forget that. You know, I'm like, you know, I just drove 2 hours to get here and now you're going to cancel and I got to turn around and drive 2 hours back. So, you know, short of a direct category three hit, I don't cancel anything. And, you know, by the same token on the Hurricane Nationals, there were people that are not from here that were scheduled to fly in that were upset.
Right.
And I 100% understand that. You know, it's to us, to Floridians, I think that was may have even only been a Cat 2, even if it was a Cat 3. If it's not a direct hit, that's no big deal in Florida.
Right.
You know, but if you're coming from Oklahoma, then it's and you're watching Cantori or whatever that douche's name is on the Weather Channel, you know, they make it sound like the world's coming to an end. And I appreciate that. You know, if I was going to, if I was shooting a match in California and they said there's an earthquake predicted tomorrow, I probably wouldn't go because that would freak me out. But if you live in California, earthquake's no big deal. You know, like,
right.
What scale is it on? However they rate. But anyway, I was proud that we were able to put that on the ground too and make the match go and get, let people do something that seemed normal when there was a really not a bunch of not normal stuff going on.
And then I think the other important thing for people to understand too is, all of these events, 2020, 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016, 2015, those were all contracted nationals. When you're talking from a business standpoint, this is when you as an employee of Universal had taken on the match as far as entry fee, cost of match, cost of production, everything on there. And I believe that we had kind of a hybrid where we were taking the expense of paying the range. Sometimes it was a per head count. Some of them where you were taking all the stuff in. Other times it was we were doing the awards and the events and the food. So it's
yeah,
for
we
people
work,
to understand
we work it. The contract about every different way you can and.
Yeah.
And honestly, it ends up being about the same.
Right.
And for people who don't know anything, it's not a huge profit center for us or for you probably either. But, you know, our business at the time, you know, was running matches and we're not making $1 million or retiring off of a USPSA Nationals. But it's certainly, we appreciate the prestige of having it there. I was happy to be a part of it and. You know, make a few bucks and everybody hopefully wins.
And then we go into after back-to-back nationals in October, you pulled me and Mike aside and said, hey, I'm making a change in 2021. So we changed the schedule up a little bit with we did not run multi-gun nationals in 2021. We ran the two-gun nationals. And you were the co-match director for that match with me. And I'm pretty sure after the first day, we're sitting back at the hotel. We kind of looked at each other, and I think you looked at me and said, "Oops."
Yeah, yeah, that was an oops for sure.
But it was we learned a lot. We learned a lot on how the stages worked, being a little bit different. Although the one thing that I will tell you is that I didn't have anybody come up and say that the match sucked. That it was horrible, that they wouldn't shoot it again. But I've had a ton of people
concur.
Yeah.
And all the things that I thought were bad, actually a lot of people liked, especially the three gunners, you know, with the round. I mean, the biggest thing is the round count, in my opinion. Second biggest thing was the amount of movement. And I'm relatively physical. So I, you know, that doesn't personally bother me. I just thought it was a bit much. The round count I thought was way a bit much. But a lot of the crossover three gunners that we were looking to get, thought that was great. You know, they say, hey, we came to a shooting match to shoot. So let's shoot.
Yeah,
I still wouldn't do it that way again, to your point, you know, I don't know if everybody thought it was as bad as we did.
I can tell you that when we were done with the match on Sunday, I said, absolutely not. I'm not doing it again. So in 2022, we have the two-gun PCC pistol match scheduled again.
Yeah, right.
And it was because of how many people came up and said, not only was it the most technical match that they've shot, but it was one of the more fun, different style of matches. And we took a little bit of shit because it was PCC pistol and not centerfire rifle. But when you look at USPSA and the membership and the activity, having a handgun and PCC match makes sense to our customer base and membership.
Yeah, I like the format a lot. And I mean, I like rifle too, but, you know, not a lot of ranges, not all ranges anyway, can run centerfire rifle. Anybody can run PCC. And there's a Dan Bernard over at the WAC here in Clearwater has run a lot of locals. And I like it. You know, if it's not your jam, it's not your jam, but I think it's a super fun format. You know, we thought the target issue was going to be a thing with, did you shoot the wrong target with the wrong gun? But that's not been a thing in any of the locals or the big matches that we've done. I think we found ways to do that better, or it'll be even less of a thing. And, right. This isn't on our topic of conversation, but the one thing I would maybe bring up is take a look at, could we do that hit factor or have an option to do it hit factor? I think that would be cool. I know the old multi-gun rule book had optionals, a hit factor or time plus. I don't think that's in there anymore, but something for later conversation. But I think that'll be another avenue that would add to the match.
It is in there for single rifle, single shotgun. It's how the rules are written. But that's one of these things that we continue to kind of push back for review, and we can rope the board and Troy in on some of that stuff, because I do agree that having it hit factor will change it up quite a bit.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. That make a big difference, especially the minor scoring. I like the hose as much as the next guy, but it would be cool. It's just some things you can do, you know, with partial targets and max traps or whatever, it makes a difference if it's hit factor or time plus in how you attack the targets. So I think it would be cool, but either way, I like two gun, just not 7,500 rounds per stage.
Right. Well, yeah, I think we've talked and have some plans in place for that match for next year. So you brought up partial targets. Let's do a quick recap of 2021. Nationals that we just came out of, because we rolled into PCC Carry Optics and then Open Limited as a back-to-back format, where you were the co-match director with me. We did something a little different this time, to where I gave zones assigned to different stage designers. I actually only had two stages in this match. We had Walt Pagel, who is a Michigan section coordinator, took a zone. Mike Cowell took a zone, and you took a zone. And let's talk a little bit about your philosophy on stages real quick that we saw at the 2021 Nationals.
Yeah, well, that was a great idea. I think that was super cool. Worked out well. You got a different flavor. And it was really evident. You know, going from zone to zone, it was pretty clear that there was a different designer that designed them. So I would do a sustain on that for sure in the future. My philosophy, well, number one, I like things that are difficult. It's a shooting sport. You know, you should be required to hit stuff. And in hindsight, the one thing I messed up is there was three single-handed stages in the first match anyway, only two in the second. And I don't know how I did that. That wasn't the best of plans, but I still like the stage ideas. And like when I design a stage, it normally starts with one single thing. And then I build a bunch of fluffer around that to make it a stage. So, you know, a difficult swinger, a distance swinger, a speed trap or a change in gear drill, you know, it all starts with one central idea. And so, for example, I think it was 13, whatever the first stage was up there. Well, with the strong end, Because it was weekend, I think.
Last 6 weeks.
So, you know, the rule book sucks and it won't allow you to do a complete stage with one hand, which is what I would have preferred. I would have preferred a, you know, 12 to 18 round stage with a single hand, but you can't do that in the rules. So I did the last six, which I don't really like, but I wanted to feel the it thing for that stage was a field course element with a single hand. The standards thing, I still don't know about that.
I noticed that you haven't contacted me about making that a classifier.
Yeah, and I might have forgot to write down the measurements too, so it's probably not going to happen. But so clearly that started with a weak-handed load, which in 20 years of shooting I've never seen before. I don't even know how I came about it. I was probably having a bourbon or something and thought about it. I texted a couple friends. You know, A, what do you think? And B, have you ever seen it? And, you know, half of the what do you think answers were, that's dumb. And then 100% of have you ever seen the answers were, no, never. So that was it. That's all I needed to hear. And, you know, something had never been done before. So that's what came up with that stage. And, you know, we had too many DQs there. So my fault, shouldn't have done it, but you know, it wasn't as many as it could have been. I think I told you, I went up there to watch the stage on, morning
first day
yeah morning of yeah, day one
morning of the first day
the first squad and like the third shooter DQs ADs on the load. I'm like, oh Jesus, here we go. And I thought it was going to end up being 100 people.
So behind the scenes there was a lot of discussion about that stage, even before we went into setup. I think me, you, Troy, and then, you know, we started seeing a bunch of internet chatter about, you know, the stage isn't legal, and then people figured out, yeah, it is legal. And then you saw a bunch of people practicing for one single stage of the match, which I thought was kind of, you know,
Well, you
backed, wait until you see the first swingers.
Yeah, you backed me up. I was, upon arrival, I was pretty sure it was going to get changed after talking to Troy and Jody and everybody, and I was okay with that. You know, I told Troy, look, man, I'm here working for you, so you tell me what to do and I'll build it. But then you kind of back me up. And if we change it now, all the internet people are going to be pissed because we changed it, because they've been practicing it. And it was fine, man. It was fine. You know, we had a little problem with the timing because it was a double bay, another horrible idea of mine, putting three starts in one bay. But we made some procedural changes in the afternoon of day one, and that wasn't a problem the rest of the day. So that was fine. And then the last stage up there, just because I've seen some other podcasts where they're talking about this stage and the dumbness of it and the carry the can thing. but the reason I did that, so again, every stage has got a thing. So the thing for that stage was, you know, I'm not a huge PCC shooter, but I am a PCC fan. I like the division. It's super fun to shoot. I'm not, you know, I don't spend a lot of time on it, but I enjoy it. We just had the monster match down here this fall, last month, which is 50 round courses of fire. That, you know, that's when I really love PCC. But the reason I did that stage is what I hear on the interwebs is that stage designers don't like PCC because they have to modify their stages because of PCC. And I don't think that's true. The you know, the only modification maybe that I would make is we had this table thing that was like 12 inches deep that would attach to a wall, and we could do pistol on the table to start. Well, clearly you can't get a PCC on a table that's 12 inches in depth, you know, so you got to put a bigger table there to set the rifle on or cut a hole in the wall so the muzzle can go through. Not a big deal. But in terms of procedure of the stage, any stage that I've laid out ever, I don't see anything that you could not do with a PCC. So that was kind of the final FU and like, all right, now you got to carry a 30-pound ammo can just to show. And again, carry optics is no big deal. You just shoot strong hand only. But the real reason I did that stage was just to show, look, you can do anything with a PCC that you can do with a pistol. And for the same reason that wasn't in the second match, because it doesn't add anything to the stage for open and limited guys. And then, so those were the, you know, kind of big, what I thought were going to be signature stages, and it ended up stage 17 was really the big one. And that kind of, It was. I mean, it was built as it was drawn, I think, but it took on a different life on the ground because of the size and depth and width.
The size of size of that bay is huge.
Yeah. So I thought it was just going to be a basic field course. Ended up being probably the signature stage of that zone, I think, except for the dumb weekend reload thing.
Which the dumb weekend reload thing, actually, a guy who didn't practice any of that, those are my two best stages of the match. Yeah. And I think that whole conversation on that, I mean, so people understand, like, when we go and put stages on the ground, we kind of start in a zone, we go through, we build it. We put the fault lines in place, put the target stands in place, walls in place. We don't really spike anything down. Then we come back, we go through and we vet it a little bit more, put the targets up, vet it a little bit more. And I think we probably end up walking stages, what, 12, 13, 14 times?
At least. And what you just described is days long. I mean, that all doesn't happen in a day. I mean, we're at least two, if not 3 days, you know, doing that. At the beginning, which is what made me so nervous on 9 days, because we didn't have that time to do it. And even in the back-to-back, like this past match, I'm still a little nervous on the second match, because even with the limited changes, you just don't have as much time as we would like, you know.
And so then after we go through and we do that, and every time we're taking notes, we're going through and we're writing down stuff, we're going through WSBs, we're updating the playbook that we have, anything that we have changes. So when we're finally done and okay with it, we have the CROs come and walk the stage to see if they see anything that we've missed, or if there's anything that as they're running the stage, they're going to notice that's going to be more difficult, just as another set of eyes. And usually the range masters in that section are walking with us. And there's sometimes a few changes. Sometimes it's just, these guys want to put their own little personal spin on stuff, which we've kind of solved that by saying, well, if you want to, you know, unspike it, move it, tear it down, do it, here's a hammer, here's some stuff. And then they change their mind really quick. But,
right.
And after that, we go back and do it one more time.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. I know they know that, because a lot of them are very experienced, some more so than I, but if you make a simple, what seems like a innocuous move of a target, for example, the steel we moved on, whatever it was, 8 or 9 or 10 or something down there, because they were concerned, well, if they lean out of this position, they can shoot the steel and they're too close and yada, yada, yada. It was a legit concern. But we moved the steel, whatever it was, 6 inches, 8 inches. It wasn't a big deal. And then, you know, you're going to create another shoot through or another problem or something that you don't foresee if you don't have 7 eyes looking at it. You know, everybody gets hyper-focused on the one thing we're trying to fix. And then you create a problem elsewhere, not knowing it, which is why, right. I mean, I've told everybody, and yourself included, I could go out and walk stages that we've built 100 times and I'll find something every time. You know, it's never going to be good enough for me. And, you know, it could be a barrel's not nailed down, or it could be a target's not indexed. You know, it could be something small, but you can never vet and walk stuff enough, because there's not a single time I've walked a set of stages and not found something that was worthy of a change.
Yeah. And then even with this past nationals in the first match, that stage that you're talking about, we did move a popper 6 inches. And then on the afternoon squad of the first day, they find a shoot through. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we completely, 11 people standing on the stage missed that. If you leaned out 3 inches on one side, you had a shoot through. So that had to be corrected. And they put some wood behind it. So if somebody took advantage of that, you would be able to see the hits going behind it. But that's one of those things you're just like, shit, how did we all miss it? And it's because we were looking at a popper.
Yep.
All right. So I've suckered you into some more stuff for 2022. We kicked 2022 off with bringing traditional multi-gun nationals, shotgun, rifle, pistol, back to a new location with you as the match director, and me co-match directoring with you. And we're going to Clinton House, South Carolina. Now, you shot there before 10, 12 years ago, you said, but we've gone and visited. When did we go? In August, I think, July,
yeah,
August, something
so.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be awesome, man. Great venue. It's going to be more what people want in terms of natural terrain stuff. They've done a ton of work there. If you haven't been there in a year, They've added a lot of bay, a lot of bays, and not just regular bay. Don't think like 25 by 25 style bays. They've added some serious size bays. So, and I think I'm going to do one more site visit. I think we talked about in January or something to do some final thoughts. But I'm looking forward to it. So what I'm looking at right now is three zones. Two zones will be in the Bay Area with one zone 100% natural terrain. But even in the Bay Areas, they've got stuff. They've got bays that go out to 300 yards. So there's going to be, you know, 100, 200, 300 yard shots with some multi-bay use. I don't know if they did that shoot house they were talking about, but even if they didn't, that one Bay Area is going to have a natural terrain aspect to it. And then you're going to pop out into a bay to finish up the stage. So I think it's going to be cool. I think we're looking at 12 stages, 4, 4, and 4. And no crazy distance based on what I saw before, but we'll have a jungle run aspect with some heavy shotgun. And again, getting out there on the natural terrain stuff, unknown distance will be cool. So, and they're great to work with. You know, Mike Sexton's up there and the owners, Chris and the other guy, I forget his name, but they're,
Chad.
Yeah, they've been super helpful. And hey, you want whatever you need, let us know, and we got the equipment and we'll make it. So I think that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, they actually not only have they added the bays that you were talking about, they did finish out the shoot house that I saw at the Pro Am back in September that Donnie Flo was running, and they are doing work right now. I just saw on a Facebook post where they're cleaning up some other areas. So the Chris and Chad that own the Clinton House have done everything that we've asked them, everything that Donnie Flo, who's running the Tar Heel 3 gun out of there, the Pro-Am out of there, and he has some other matches scheduled for next year, multi-gun. And they have sold out all of the multi-gun matches that they've put on there, which was one of the reasons why we're taking our multi-gun nationals there, is because there is a lot of three-gun shooting going on at that range.
Yeah, it's a good area. You know, geographically, it's in a good spot to grab a lot of people. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so that match, the staff match, it's sponsored by Palmetto State Armory. The staff match is March 30th and 31st. The regular competitor is a three-day April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
April
and
we're 1st.
And we're actually shooting on April 1st. Sure. You can tell that story on podcast number 4.
Yeah, I never did find that guy.
So registration will open December 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is a Friday night. The next match that we've got coming up is the World Speed Shooting Championship, which is going to be at the CMP Talladega Range. Registration is going to open on December 11th at 8 p.m. Zach Jones is the Steel Challenge coordinator. That match runs April 27th through May 1st. And then we go straight into Classic Nationals at the CMP Talladega Range again, which is going to be single stack, L10, and revolver combined. So Saturday and Sunday, it will be combined. Single stack is not standalone. So it's based on the participation that we've seen at matches over the last couple of years. We're going to combine the three divisions and run that as a two-day match. Staff shooting May 20th with regular competitors on May 21st and 22nd. That's a slot match. So what that means is that slots and pre-registrations, so performance earned slots based on your division performance in single stack L10 and revolver at nationals and area matches, you'll get performance earned slots on January 2nd. Pre-registration will then start on February 4th. So that gives time for the section coordinators to distribute slots. That runs through March 4th, and then open registration starts on March 5th. We're going to a new venue, Cameo Shooting Complex outside of Grand Junction, Colorado, for the Two Gun Nationals. So you're coming back in and helping me with that match.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I have not been to that range yet. I know you've been there, but I'm looking forward to checking it out. It looks like there's plenty of distance, especially for two gun type stuff. So stretch out those carbines a little bit.
And they have been holding, Pete Rensing has been running UML matches out there. They run a standard three-gun match. They run USPSA, IDPA, Steel Challenge. They run all of that at that range in Colorado on a regular basis, along with the Bighorn Classic. They just had IDPA Nationals. They're the home of the Girl and a Gun annual event. And that is a easy place to get to, where you can fly into Grand Junction. You can fly into Montrose Telluride. You could fly into Denver. You could fly into Salt Lake. You got a little bit of a drive between those two. But there's been a lot of big matches that are out there. I think we talked about you going out to the Bighorn with me in April or May, so we can do a site visit and shoot a match. So we'll take a look at that.
I don't recall that conversation, but I'm down.
I maybe have had it with myself to remind you of it.
No, I'm looking forward. It's nice to get a new spot. You know, to different schools of thought on this as well. You know, I'm on both sides of the fence. I think it would be nice if USPSA had their own range that they could have, you know, their nationals at all the time. But I also think it's super cool that you move it around. And, you know, we talked about the restrictions a little bit into who can hold nationals. So it's cool that there's a new spot to put in the rotation, and haven't been to Colorado in a long time. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Walt Prue out there, who is the general manager of the range at Cameo, they built another 8 bays. So they have 26 or 28 bays
nice.
That they can hold. And it will be able to put a lot of stuff on the ground out there. They not have the about, action.
Not that I care about this in terms of putting on a match, but how is the surrounding amenities in terms of hotels, restaurants, and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, they actually they've got quite a few hotels. It's a tourist destination for skiing, and there's other things that are out there. We've already been in contact with the Grand Junction Sports Marketing, who are looking at helping doing some grants similar to what we had with the Polk County folks.
Cool.
There is one of the range members is a general manager of a hotel that is right like an exit down from it that we've got staff going in. So we're all set up. We're ready to roll with everything going on out there. And they have been extremely accommodating. They have the Action Shooting League, that is the affiliated USPSA club that's on the ground. So we've contracted with the state park Cameo. We've contracted with the club, and we're ready to roll. Registration for the two-gun match will open on January 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern time as well. And then we get a little bit of a break. We go Carry Optics Nationals, which will be a standalone nationals back at the CMP in Talladega. Staff's going to shoot September 7th and 8th, and then regular competitors are September 9th, 10th, and 11th. That will be slot codes based on performance earned from nationals, areas, and then sections. That'll be sent out on February 8th. Pre-registration starts on March, I believe it's March 11th. And then open registration is April 15th for that. And then we have the big event that finishes out the end of the year, which are the four divisions, PCC, Limited, Open, and Production. Go back to the Cameo Shooting Complex. That is going to be three-day staff match, the 11th, 12th, and 13th of October. Regular competitors are October 14th, 15th, and 16th, and 17th. You heard that correctly. Four days.
That's some old school shit right there, baby.
That is the ability to run 6666 at 24 stops over a four-day period of time into the zones that they have out there, four zones. Probably be a 26, 27, 8-stage nationals. Slot codes will go out of that on March 6th. April 29th will be pre-registration, and June 3rd is open registration.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that is – and people were like, you know, Colorado in October. Yeah, Cameo Shooting Complex in Grand Junction is on the far western part of it. It is the desert. So it's very similar to the weather that you would experience, where it's going to be a little chilly in the morning and then it warms up in the afternoon, because it is high desert kind of stuff. It's not the mountains of Colorado. And They host a lot of matches that are out there. The bays have covered areas on them, so it's really nice. Anybody that's been out there knows. Anybody that has questions,
space to get out of the snow.
Yes, yeah. Snow boots and shoes and stuff will be
outdoor sport, man. There's nothing says. I mean, people complain about Florida and the heat, and they complain about the bugs and Barry and.
Oh yeah, yeah.
If you don't like it, take up bowling or something. And that's coming from a guy that hates cold weather, but. I'm down for anything.
I always tell people that in bowling, you still get to have the cool shoes and cool shirts, and it's just indoors. So,
yeah, air conditioning, and doesn't start at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Right. So that is going to be the Nationals. One of the things that we kind of talked a little bit as we were going into is how slots work, because there's always been this kind of if you show up, you can get in the Nationals, the national slots are not based on performance, which is not true. If you go to the website and actually click on the Nationals link that are on there and the slot policy, performance is based on your Nationals performance on overall division finish for the top 10 based on 10 slots per every 10 competitors. The class winners and the category winners. That then carries over into the area matches, again, based on if you're a resident of the area that you're in, you can win a division, a class, or category slot. And then the section slots are based on activity points or the activity fees that are paid in from the matches. And then those slots are given to the section coordinators, who give those out based on their bylaws. Most of the section bylaws are based on section match performance or point series that are out there. So it is based on performance to get into Nationals. We've seen 50 to 60% return on the slots, and what's left over is what goes into the open registration. So a lot of people kind of misunderstand that, it's not performance based to get into Nationals, and a guy who just signed up 2 weeks ago could come to Nationals as an unclassified shooter. If there's open registration, yeah. If there's slots that aren't used, but every slot is allocated based on performance from Nationals areas and then based on the section activity. Open registration is just the slots that are returned back that aren't used. So hopefully that clears that up for some folks. People that want to get in and don't want to wait for open registration, who didn't win a slot based on their performance, should be in their section coordinator's ear right now about when you get those slots, what are our bylaws and how do I get one?
Right.
And that's the easiest way to get in.
Yeah. And it depends. Number one, I think it's a prestige thing. Like it's cool. Excuse me. It's cool to air quote earn a slot. So there's that aspect of it. And then you're assured you're getting in, and it comes down to how you split them up as well. You know, if you've got the capacity of the match and the number of stages and the divisions involved, some matches are going to be more popular than others in terms of people. So those, having the slots matters. And I do think, as I've told you before, I do think that the value of a slot can be diminished sometimes by the fact that everybody thinks you can just sign up and get in. But I think you had a number of late withdrawals at the last Nationals, but there for a minute it was chock full with a big waiting list. So all the sudden slots become real important.
Yeah, for PCC Carry Optics, we actually did have about 22 withdrawals there right towards the couple days. A lot of it had to do with COVID related stuff and canceled
travel
flight.
Stuff. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. But when you look at limited and open, it was full. And the only people that were no-shows is the only reason why it wasn't the total 390 competitors plus staff. And there was, I think, only 8 no-shows.
All right. Which another thing, not on our topic of conversation, but if you're not going to come to a Nationals, text somebody. Give us a call, because it really does – it affects the squatting, it affects people that could get in, number one. Like even if you're an hour out and you can't make it, just give us a call, email, text, something, man, because getting the tablets right, getting the squads right, it really messes things up for an event like that. And especially if you're a group from four riding together from Sheboygan and you decide not to come and you're all in the same squad, it really makes a problem. So send a brother a text next time.
Yes. I don't think people quite understand that the matrix is based on a per shooter number. All right. 3 minutes, 4 minutes per shooter. So if you're a squad of 12 and it's 4 minutes per shooters and the schedule is based that, you know, you're going to turn that stage in 45 minutes or 48 minutes and then four people don't show up. Not only do the competitors have to do a ton of extra work, but they also are going to be sitting because they're going to back up 12 minutes.
And just simple
stage.
Customer service things like, you know, Jake wants to shoot with Fred, but Fred's squad's full. And then the match kicks off and three people don't show up on Fred's squad. We could have got Jake over there and made him happier, you know? So there's a whole lot of trickle down things that matter and stuff like that. Just as a little PSA out there for me. If you're not going to come, send me a text.
And the only people that want to shoot with me are people that think I'm going to take their picture and put in the magazine, which is the easiest way to get in there is if you shoot on my squad and I remember your name.
Your camera adds 10 pounds, by the way.
Yes, it does. All right. That's the national stuff that I wanted to go over. Keep this right under an hour. What do you got going on? I know that you've got classes that you have coming up that you're teaching there in the Florida area.
Yeah, man. Good time of year down here. So I'm doing a lot of private stuff. I don't have any group on the calendar, but I'll be getting some on there soon. And if anybody wants me in their area, have gun, we'll travel. Just reach me on the website or any social medias and I'll be happy to put something together for you.
Then you're going to be back doing your podcast on some stuff?
I don't know, man. I suck. So I really do enjoy doing it, but I'm so haphazard. And, you know, really, I travel a lot with teaching, even hitting the Florida ranges. It's an hour and a half, 2 hour drive to various different spots. And I've frankly gotten into listening to a lot of podcasts and kind of gotten away from doing them. But I always say I'm going to get back at it. I really do enjoy talking shooting. But, no promises, but you know, the season, I guess, is pretty much done around the country, but it's never done in Florida. So we have the Florida State Championship here in just over a month. So if you guys want to get some training, get tuned up for that match, give me a holler. Let's do it.
Yeah, they've got so Gorka's got the Florida section.
Oh, that's right. December. Yeah, I have anniversary. That's our anniversary. So I'm out of town. I won't be able to make that match, but yeah, that's coming up soon.
And then Dan Bernard is running the Florida State match there at the WAC that kind of kicks off the season now for 2022 down there.
Yeah, new venue for the Florida State match. I can't say enough about the squad there. Mark Walker is also the match director, and they have Mike Howell is new rangemaster. You know, he's heavily involved, and the list goes on forever with how solid the crew is that runs that local club. And it's an interesting range if you haven't been there, but it's going to be a great match. They put on some fantastic stages with, you know, they have some limitations on what they can do in the range in terms of angles of fire and stuff. But I just shot there a couple weeks ago or a week ago, and they always put on awesome stages. I'm designing a couple stages for that match. I'll be working that match as well. So looking forward to that.
All right. Sounds good. Well, we're going to wrap this up. Shannon, thanks for joining us. And we will be back with another podcast, probably with the area directors. I'll have you come on for that and you can ask them some questions.
Yeah, I'll be there with bells on, boy. Bring it. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. No problem. Thanks. Talk to you soon. Later.
To find out more about USPSA and Steel Challenge, visit USPSA.org or SCSA.org. Download the USPSA and SCSA mobile apps available in your app store. Check out the NROI.org podcast available on your favorite podcast platform. All rights for this podcast are reserved. No portion of this podcast may be used or redistributed without written permission from the USPSA president. Rules and bylaw discussions on this podcast do not constitute official rulings or bylaw change. Discussions on this podcast are meant to inform and educate. If you have questions or want to reach out to your area director or USPSA office staff, visit uspsa.org/contact.